the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, I'm officially recording this episode under protest. If my team hasn't fronted up since the international break, I don't know why I should have to.
Fair enough. I'm surprised you actually have turned up, and a fair play to you for that. I'm also surprised you didn't bring in Alan Gibson just to shift some of the focus away from FC Tokyo. But yeah, we'll get into that, I suppose. And not a great afternoon, was it?
No, that's putting it mildly. It's certainly been a rough three games since the return from the international break. Joining us to, hopefully make some sense about what's going on at FC Tokyo these days is a favourite of the J-Talk Airways. He's back for, I believe, his first appearance of the season itself. It's Scott McIntyre. Scott, always great to have you with us. How are you?
Likewise. I'm glad to be on this history-making episode of the J-Talk podcast when we are going to do the first ever hour plus under. We're going to do under an hour for the first time in the J-Talk pod history. So I'm glad to be making history.
All right. Thanks very much for that, Scott. It's terrific to have you with us, as I mentioned. All right. So, let's get straight into the action from the weekend then. And, it's a bit of a stretch to say the first round of games in the second half of the season might have been title defining, Sam. But Yokohama F. Marinos certainly laid down a marker in the first game of the match day that kicked off at 4 p.m. On Saturday afternoon in the blazing heat at the Nissan Stadium. F. Marinos swept aside Kashiwa Reysol 4-0.
Yeah, it was a perfect result for them. And obviously, the way the other results with Kashima and Kawasaki went. Yeah, great weekend. This was like the game of the weekend that I thought. I thought Kashima would give them a real test. But unfortunately for Kashima, that never really materialised. I thought Marinos were in control for almost all of the game. They got a little bit lucky with the way the first goal deflects in. And then Kashima decided to just kind of fall apart with Kamijima's poor touch that let in Elbert. But after that, it was all F. Marinos. I thought they played incredibly well. Fujita in midfield, I thought, was absolutely superb. I said before I had a slight worries about Kida not being in that team. But Fujita had a very good time of it over in the under-23 championships. And he's taken that on in this game. I thought he was fully in control. And Yokohama, just in general, were fully in control. Kashima really disappointed me. I expected them to do a little bit more, but none of their better players really turned up, and they shot themselves in the foot. As I mentioned, with that second goal, just conceded so quickly to go 2-0 down, it was pretty much game over. And then the manner in which they conceded the third as well would have been really disappointing. But yeah, fair play to F. Marinos, a perfect weekend for them.
Yeah, and they bounced back from the disappointment of going out of the Emperor's Cup on Wednesday. There were some big fish that were plucked out of the pond in the Emperor's Cup. But F. Marinos certainly bouncing back. Takuma Nishimura opening the scoring and scoring for the second straight game, as did Kota Mizunuma. And that came after Elbert set up Leo Ciara for the second. So, Scott, a burst of three goals in 11 minutes, put a cap on the game before even half an hour was played. And Leo Ciara added the icing on the cake just after the break. But F. Marinos certainly looking in imperious form with the four straight wins now and a real season defining run coming up for them in the next six match days. They'll play the other occupants of the top four, including Kashima and Kawasaki, back-to-back in late July, early August. But they are looking in, pretty much tip-top shape at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, they're playing really good football. It's a fantastic credit to Kevin Muscat and his staff. Because, over this little run where they've done well, and this game in particular, for the first time, I really thought there were moments where they equal, if not maybe even surpassed, the kind of football that they were playing under Ange during that 2019 run. Very aggressive football, very dominant football. They're playing very high up the pitch, a lot of the same traits that we saw with Ange, where the fullbacks are tucking centrally and high up the pitch, and they play so well in small spaces, in tight spaces, and it was really reminiscent of the crystal moments that team had under Ange in 2019. I think they're reaching a very similar level, to be honest, with a squad that maybe, I don't know, is not as good. I think the job that he's done, particularly in developing players, has been fantastic. Joel Fujita, that Sam touched on, has always been a player of good promise. I think, again, he's been polished coming into the team. For me, the real standout has been Ryotaro Sonoda, the young defender, came through Maebashi High School, one of the dominant high schools. I think he had a spell at Reds for a while, and then went off to university and came in through there through Tsukuba, the big university program. But he's come in and he's looked right at home. And again, I just keep wondering, maybe it was the injury that opened the door. Eduardo came in late. They lost Thiago Martins, as we know. Eduardo came in. He was injured. Hatanaka was injured in and out. And the one real constant throughout that has been Sonoda. And I think he's been one of the better I'm not sure what defenders you had on your shortlist for the mid-season discussion, but yeah, for mine, he should have been on that list, because he's been an absolute revelation. Really calm, really composed on the ball. When he's not in possession, his positioning is excellent. His movement is excellent. His reading one-on-one is good. His passing is good. If he's not in this EAFF squad, then yeah, the coach needs to have his head checked, because he's a fantastic young player, and I would go as close to say that he should almost be in consideration, maybe to be even on the fringes of the World Cup squad. He's been, I think, one of the best defenders in the league this year. And again, that's credit to Muscat and his staff for polishing him. He's turned Leo Ciara into some form of a player, setting in mind that Anderson Lopez is nominally the nine. He's not had to worry about Marcos's dip in fitness and in form, because Nishimura has come on well. The wide players are doing well. Yamane, we saw early in the season, who was off in some of these Japan youth teams recently as well, has also stepped in and looked completely comfortable. And I think they're the real model. If you look at the other ACL clubs, how they juggled it heading into the ACL, he really rotated the squad heavily to expose players in the league. They then went to the ACL, looked comfortable there, and they've come back and been able to do the same here. Whereas, yeah, a lot of the other ACL clubs haven't, maybe until recently, engaged in that form of rotation. So the player signings were good, but for me, the real key thing here is the development of them. And we look across the league, there's so many. I think this year it's really stark how many poor coaches there are in the league, not just the locals, but I think there's a lot of poor foreign coaches as well. There's probably only, I think, really a handful, maybe three or four coaches you can look at and say, okay, because the Japanese players are good footballers. We've talked about this before, right? They're all technically good players. And certainly at this level, and the coaching really is the difference. And I think the development work, that Muscat and his team have done at Marinos has been absolutely fantastic. And that's really come to fruition in this run. Players were, okay, you can drop other players in because they know the system and they've been well coached and they know how to play it. And yeah, I think they're playing some really, really good football.
Yeah, I agree with you on Sonoda. I think, just to defend ourselves, because we didn't put him in the shortlist, I think there are 9 league games this season that he hasn't started. So perhaps that was probably part of our thinking, that I think we cut out various other players for that sort of reason. But I completely agree with you, the way that he's managed to step into that breach. He's so comfortable on the ball. He can also play out a little bit wider if he wanted to. I think he has played, like, maybe as a youth level more as a left back. So yeah, he's quite suited to coming out as well. Whether Mr. Moriyasu in the EFA Cup tries to use him and maybe as one of the left back options, because Japan are searching out for a left back and have just tried every sort of player there. But yeah, I think it's a bit far-fetched to think that Moriyasu is going to put him in. Maybe another coach in that position would do, but I think that's Maya Yoshida's position. It's going to be that forever, unfortunately. But yeah, I completely agree with everything that you've said, actually, on Marinos. I think we spoke a fair bit this earlier in the season, before they went off to the ACL, the way he rotated those players. I thought, yeah, Fujita, we've mentioned all the time, Yamane as well, and he's got so many good options that they've been able to step into breaches with various injuries as well, because they have not had a smooth run in terms of fitness either. He's had to deal with a lot of problems, and yeah, it's been fantastic the way he's managed the squad, and they're top of the table now. and deservedly so. Yeah, he's definitely casting doubt on the doubters of Kevin Muscat. He's performing, yeah, really well, much better than I thought he maybe would have done, and maybe he was showing right at the start of his reign last season.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to come on and ask you as well, Scott. I mean, it must be really pleasing on a personal basis for Muscat. I mean, he's obviously not in this for, you know, personal point scoring or anything like that. But, yeah, the fact that there were some doubters and it wondered how he might go and, yeah, how stark the difference would be once he was fully settled in from Ange Ball. But yeah, I think we can all see that he's been able to develop the team in his own methods. But yes, they're definitely getting the results, and there certainly are echoes of the tremendous pressure and attacking football that Ange Postecoglou is well known for, and was certainly an exponent of at F Marino. So yeah, I mean, for Muscat, I mean, the job is only half done, of course, but yeah, I'm sure he must be very pleased with the way things have gone so far this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I spent a bit of time with him in pre-season. He had a giant dossier of comparisons of the last couple of games of last season back to some of those seasons under Ange, you know, in terms of the positioning, the areas on the pitch where they won the ball, the areas on the pitch where they lost the ball, you know, a whole raft of detailed analytical requirements. And he made the reasonable argument that on many counts they were similar or if not better in some of those things. But the good thing about him, you know, he's probably not going to be happy me even outing that kind of conversation, because he's not, like you say, in it for his own personal glory or gain. But I know that that some of the commentary around it, you know, that he was a real step down somehow. I think that got to him a little bit and it hurt him. So, yeah, I'm really pleased and just pleased to see that, you know, our perspective, another Australian coach is doing so well, because, you know, we may not be producing the world's best footballers at the moment, dancing goalkeepers aside. But, I think we've got some fantastic coaches. And there's, if I was a Mariners fan, the only worry would be how much longer you might keep him, you know, before he gets a return to European football. Because, yeah, the way he's got the team playing is great, but I keep coming back to it. It's the development of the players, because these players under, you know, 75% of the coaches elsewhere in the league, in my opinion, they wouldn't be playing. And if they were playing, they wouldn't be playing to the level. And you can see that in so many of the, you know, the other clubs where we're going to go through just, you know, fundamental things around you know, positioning and basic tactical elements that seem to be missing from so many clubs this year in J1. So, yeah, I think Marinos are flying the flag, and a real lot of the credit has to go to Muscat and the staff below him.
Indeed, and a tremendous performance from F. Marinos, scoring in bunches again, and running out fully deserved 4-0 winners over Kashiwa. So just Sam, ever so briefly before we move off this game, Raysal obviously came into the match day fourth in the table, and you know, you rightly picked this as the game of the match day. It was the first versus fourth. So as you mentioned yourself, Raysal were unlucky with the opener that took a heavy deflection off Yuji Takahashi and gave Masato Sasaki no chance. But yes, once they gave the ball away for the second, just 2 minutes later, I guess the writing was on the wall. And as chastening as a defeat this will be for Nelsinho and his guys, I guess they just try and shrug this one off. And they were just the victims of the leaders in really good form on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I guess they had to. I was quite disappointed at the lack of real response, but maybe you have to give credit to F. Marinos, who took that 2-goal lead and then didn't let up. They kept pressing them. They kept forcing the errors. And I thought, but generally, the defending the third goal, I think, is really poor. It's just a simple throw-in. If against Marinos, you sometimes accept being torn apart, or they play a really good passing move past you. But it was quite an easy throw-in to Leo Sierra, and nobody tracked Mizunuma's run, and then you're 3-0 down. And then the defending again wasn't great from the free kick right at the start of the second half. So every time there might have been a chance for them to maybe get back into the game, they had just got killed off. And yeah, it was just a poor response to it. But they've got one. doesn't get much easier. They've got Kashima next. They have to bounce back in that because, yeah, this was a really poor display, I thought, from them compared to how they played against Marinos earlier in the season. Granted the caveat of Marinos being down to 10 men, but I thought Kashima's approach in that first game was much better and caused a lot more issues. But in this one, and maybe it is just an increase in the quality of F. Marinos in this game, but yeah, they didn't really lay a glove on them. So yeah, they'll be disappointed, but yeah, next game comes along, they've got to bounce back.
Yeah, most definitely. That match day three loss for F. Marinos well and truly avenged on Saturday afternoon, and that's goals in two straight games for Kota Mizunuma. If he suddenly becomes prolific, yeah, I don't think I know what I'm going to do with myself about that. But anyway, yeah, so F. Marinos laid down the marker on Saturday afternoon / evening. But yes, their pace proved too hot to handle for the teams in second and third in the table at kickoff. Both Kashima and Kawasaki had to settle for 1-1 draws in their games after both taking the lead but then losing it. Second-placed Antlers travelled to Nagoya on Sunday, and though ISA Wada had a goal unluckily disallowed for handball in the 20th minute after a VAR review that was inconclusive to my view, at least the replay that I saw. But Wada bounced back and, yes, played a big role in Kashima going ahead. In the 33rd minute, he headed into the path of Hayato Nakama, who slid in and got to the ball just ahead of Mitch Langerak, dinking over the keeper. Yes, the rub of the green, officiating-wise, was definitely with Nagoya at the Toyota Stadium on Sunday. Early in the second half, the hosts were awarded a penalty after Sho Inagaki's cross hit the arm of Diego Pichuca, which, again, I'm not sure it was out of his... what's the word, Sam? It's not his shadow. What is it? His
silhouette.
That's right. I was going to say frame of reference, but yes, silhouette is correct. That's right. Yeah, so I felt that was harsh as well, but it mattered not to Mateus, who stepped up and blasted home the penalty in off Quansante's right-hand post in the 52nd minute. And both sides went close to a winner, but yeah, it was not to be, and it ended 1-1, as it did at Todoroki on Saturday night, as Kawasaki looked to bounce back after a shock defeat themselves in the Emperor's Cup on Wednesday night at the hands of Tokyo Verde. They took the lead through Miki Yamane, also in the 33rd minute, somewhat coincidentally. Yes, they were pegged back late on by an Iwata side who we know have a habit of sticking round in games. And a remarkable header from Makito Ito leveled it up with, 5 minutes to go, and they could even have won it. 2 minutes later, Rio Germain headed against a post. So in the spirit of trying to get through this episode as quickly as we can, Scott, there's two games at once for you to try and summarise. But, ultimately, F. Marinos are obviously the happiest of the top three teams. Their lead at the top of the table was 1 point at the start of the match day. It's now 3 ahead of both of their nearest challengers.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a busier time for Marinos, obviously, with the ACL coming up and depending how far they go in the tournament. But if they get through all the way through to the semifinal, that's going to be something that they obviously have to contend with that Kawasaki don't. So if you're looking maybe on the balance who's favoured to go on and win it, you'd have to still think Kawasaki because they're going to have the easier run of things. But, I mean, I know you didn't throw me Hiroshima, but... I don't know. Maybe
they're coming.
Yep. I think maybe they're the most serious challenger at the moment. You think the kind of football they're playing, they're playing really well. Kashima were okay. Yeah, I mean, after the game, Rene Vila had quite a bit to say about the VAR, and it was quite true. And I've seen some reporting of it in the Japanese media today that, you know, they maybe need to look at, if they are going to have this system, to make sure that they've got more than the one kind of simple camera angle that you had here, because it was simply inconclusive. You couldn't tell if it did or not. And the point that he made post match was, well, if you can't tell, then you stick with the original decision, which is also a good point. So yeah, you know, I mean, if you are going to do this, or I don't know, maybe you need to spend a little bit more to get another couple of camera angles to make sure things are okay. Because I don't know, the end of the season, maybe this is the difference. If it's going to be tight, you know, a couple of points, and then he's got a real you know, point to make. I think this was a different kind of a performance from Kashmir, particularly in the first half. They tended to sit back a bit at times. There were a few, or perhaps more than usual, kind of long balls that we saw. But I think that changed a little bit in the second half. But the thing you also, it's really noticeable about the whole team for me is the clear camaraderie in the squad as well. You know, I think after they scored the goal, they've got some kind of weird Pacific Islander prayer circle thing that they've got going on at the moment. They all gather in a circle and seem, I don't know what they're doing inside there, but it clearly shows that there's a good spirit and camaraderie within the team. I think the decision to make Yuma Suzuki captain is a really fine one as well. He was at his most outspoken here several times throughout the game. He had to be calmed down, pulled back by teammates and staff. But, you know, again, in a league where there's so many elements that are the same and so few differentiating characteristics, certainly the way that captains act as leaders on the pitch is firmly in that category. So to see someone really leading, emotionally, as he does, I think is very impressive. I'm not sure, in terms of his positioning, maybe if he's being used as good as he tends to drift a fair lot as he did in this game. He was often out on the left. He's dropping deeper. At times you basically got Wader playing as the out-and-out striker, and then you've got the flexibility. He didn't start this game, Paducah did. He started deeper in this game. He's played more further forward in other games. So I think they have positional flexibility. They have good depth in the squad. And again, it's the development, of, I don't know, players like Nakama or Izumi, for example, who've, you know, kind of for the most part of their career been decent-ish kind of J-League players. Again, I think under Vila, they've been really elevated. The return of Everaldo is a really good weapon to have off the bench. And even defensively, they've managed to cover things fairly well, having, three and a half defenders in the entire squad. So, you know, I think they've been a little bit more consistent than we questioned that they would be at the start of the season. And, yeah, there's no reason why they couldn't go on and really win the title as well. As for Kawasaki, I'm probably not maybe as down. I heard some comments from Neil Debnam last week, who's he's had a golden run, and I'm not sure that he's quite enjoyed all of it as much as he should. And I wouldn't be writing off Kawasaki absolutely going on and winning the title as well. I understand Jesse Earl's back in the country, could be nearing in on a return as well, which is going to be huge for them. And I think they're not playing bad football at all. It's just a question of I think, again, there's been rotation recently. What's he doing now with Leandro Damiani? He's been in and out for certain games. Okay, rotation. Well, with the rotation, you can't really read what he's thinking the best 11 might be. But there's questions over whether he's going to be your guy up front. The whole question about what to do with Chanatip is another one, because, I mean, I think I said in preseason he's an out-and-out number 10 in a team that doesn't play a 10. He's obviously a very good player, and I don't know, maybe the time has come to look at slightly tweaking things. Of Tachi Bernardo at left-back is a curious kind of situation. The other left-back's playing centre-back, and the other left-back is out injured, and then you've got Sasaki who's missed for the last couple of games. So there's issues maybe around the positioning of players within the structure and how to get the best out of the squad that he's got there. But I think they're not really far away. There's still, you know, the trademarks that Oniki's had are basically there, the basic elements. He doesn't have the same quality of player, that's clear. Marcinho's been in and out of the squad in recent weeks. I think he's clearly obviously the best option that they've got on the left, but they've gone, okay, what do you do with Tonga? We're playing him left, you're playing him central. Now Oshim is back. So he's got a lot of pieces to shuffle and throw around. But I think there's core players that the team needs to be built around. They haven't had that stability, whether it's rotation or whether it's choice, in recent weeks. But like I said, they're out of the Emperor's Cup now. They're out of the ACL. So, aside from the Biscuit Cup, they've pretty much got this and not much else to focus on. So if he gets maybe, I don't know, perhaps a defensive reinforcement, although, like I said, Jesse Earl coming back is essentially that, and with Oshima as well. So, I think they're poised, certainly, to make a real big run. And Yeah, and if I was a fan, I don't know how many complaints I'd be having about Onyeki, who's managed to regenerate and rebuild this squad, consistently year on year, where he's losing his best players, and I think he's done a very good job. And yeah, they're poised in a very good position to strike.
Yeah, certainly not the best week for Frontale, but yes, we've seen their quality over the course of the last five seasons, and yes, I think a number of us have the faith in Toru Onyeki to turn things around. I imagine Neil has really suffered through the last few days of going out of the Emperor's Cup to a J2 team, and then seeing a lead blown late on, Sam, especially when Chanatip, who Scott's talked about there, had a gilt-edged chance 10 minutes into the second half to add to Frontale's lead. From the highlights, it didn't appear they were really banging the door down for a second goal apart from that. So as we've seen, and I mentioned earlier, Iwata certainly have a knack of striking late, don't they? I added it up today. That's the third time this season they've scored in the last 5 minutes to draw a game, while they've also scored two late winners from the 85th minute on. So if you consider that they were drawing and would have got a point from the two games that they've won, then they've earned 7 points from either drawing or losing positions in the last 5 minutes of games. And when they're only on 19 for the season so far, you can see that they've certainly reaped the rewards for keeping on going right until the end of matches. So for them, it was a happy trip to Todoroki, and a second straight 1-1 draw against the champions this year, which is some feat in and of itself. But I'm sure frustration for Frontale supporters, and for Antlers as well. Going back to that game, Sam, I mean, they certainly did not get the rub of the green, did they, when it came to the officiating?
I'll start with Kashima then. I thought the penalty was a terrible decision. Like, Pituka, his arm is slightly up, but it's always coming down into his body. He's like half a yard away from Inagaki as he crosses. There is nothing he can do about it. I just can't see why that's a penalty. So it's, a bit of luck for Nagoya, and they score from that. And they had a lot of possession, Nagoya, but really, without a proper centre-forward, they can put the ball into the box as many times as they like. They're not really going to score many goals. They looked okay. I think they had decent possession. It looked like maybe they were probably, in terms of possession of the ball, they maybe looked like they were on top. But I don't think they ever look like scoring. Kashima, that maybe didn't quite play as well as they could have done. But that's that game. I'll go back to Kawasaki because I got a lot more to say on them. I think, obviously, with Jubilo, the way that they managed to pick up points, if you don't kill them off, they're going to come back and haunt you. And Kawasaki just didn't really play the direct football at all. They have a lot of players on the pitch that are going to keep possession. Like, everyone was wanting to play kind of in the same area. If you've got Tachibanada coming in from left back, wants to play in the centre. Kobayashi was up front but always wants to drop deep. And you've got a Chanatip on the left, he wants to come in. Ianaga likewise. Everyone was kind of playing in one intricate area. And when Jubilo are just going to sit men behind the ball, it's so difficult for them to play through. They very rarely did. The one time they actually went direct was when Taniguchi just stepped up and said, I'm going to play the ball over. Yamane made the run. I think he's crossing, but it went in anyway. So that's how they got their goal. Otherwise, for the rest of the game, except for that one moment you mentioned with Chanatip where it was just a breakdown in play, there happened to be a gap that he was played into, they just really struggled. And their most dynamic players were left on the bench in terms of Marcinho, I think, has been perhaps their best player this season going forward. He's been left on the bench for the last two league games, which I think is a mistake. And Damian has also been dropped to the bench the last two games. And I think it's because he wants to play this possession football. He's learned, if we've got the ball, they can't do anything to us. Eventually we'll break them down. We've got enough players. But because they haven't quite got that dynamic running behind, or necessarily anyone that wants to shoot either, because they just pass the ball for a bit too much. So I think he needs to just shake himself up a little bit, be a little bit more aggressive, be a bit quicker in the tempo, because I agree the players are all there and they should be winning more games and not playing like this. But I think they had that false dawn against, that might not be the right term, but against Sapporo, where they played this way, but because it was Sapporo, they just gifted them goals. So they just thought, okay, that's the way to go. And Jubilo, I didn't think this way of playing was ever going to work. And granted, they were winning and it could have worked. But Jubilo just picked them off at the end. So just needs to up the tempo again. I said this last week. I think if they do that, and I'm pretty confident that Onyeki can see that and will eventually do that. I know Neil Denman doesn't think that's likely and he's never going to change and deserves to be sacked or something. But yeah, I think Kawasaki, yeah, just the players there just need to flick a switch and they'll be okay. But credit again to Jubilee, because I still don't think they play that well, but they were organised, keep themselves in games, and they're just picking up crucial points, which, given how tight the league is towards the bottom, or from upper mid-table down to the bottom, these are very vital points for them to be picking up.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, so that's the top three taken care of. And now moving up into fourth place are Sanfrecce Hiroshima. They are, well, F. Marinos are on four straight wins, and Hiroshima the same. And they, yeah, ultimately swept aside Fukuoka late on at the Best Denki Stadium on Saturday. Yes, the third of the games played on Saturday. Their man of the moment, Makoto Mitsuta, blasted Sanfrecce into the lead just before the half hour. But birthday boy Daiki Watari equalised for Avispa 8 minutes before half time. Douglas Vieira was to have the final word, though, as he bagged a 10-minute brace in the last 15 minutes, first lobbing Murakami after Masaaki Murakami after a ball over the top from Gakuto Notsuda, and then firing home from the penalty spot after the referee brought a ridiculous tumble to the floor from Hiroshima captain Sho Sasaki. So, Sam, well, I'll come straight back to you. Mitsuta is obviously the man of the moment, and he's, yes, he's one of the J-Talk players of the season. No question about that. And great to see him on the score sheet. Again, a nice, fresh new haircut for our Makoto. And, yes, he helped steer Sanfrecce up to fourth in the table.
Yeah, again, he's fantastic, isn't he? He's the wonderful debut season. This finish is just so good. It looks like he's been playing forever. Just the composure, the perfectly placed. And yeah, it's just Hiroshima doing what they do best in this system. They press really high. They caused the error off Mae from Notsuda got in there. Ben Khalifa played it out. Nice goal from Mitster. And that's just they just kept pressing, kept causing errors, kept winning the ball back and always putting Avispa under pressure. Even at 1-1, there's no chance of their heads going down or anything like that. They kept going. And they've been a revelation, haven't they, with Michael Skibber, who said it pretty much every week. This was another very good performance. And he's even getting Douglas Vieira to score goals, which is nice. He took his goals pretty well. I think Murakami starts to come and then ends up kind of not knowing what to do and leaves himself in no man's land. And that was kind of the worst place for him to be. And it was pretty simple. Although it was a nice finish, it was a simple finish. And yeah, penalty, there's never a penalty. I think it's really harsh on Avispa. But I think Avispa, they were trying to be a little bit more aggressive. They've seen themselves slide towards that relegation zone. They know they don't score many goals, so they think they're going to have to go forward a bit more. But they don't have the strikers really to score too many goals. So I think if they open themselves up a little bit more, it kind of weakens their stable back line. I think this did that in this game. They were left open a little bit too much, especially when Hiroshima created those turnovers. They were left exposed and were punished. So yeah, it's a difficult one for Avispa. I think they really need to find a goal scorer in the summer transfer window, which is easier said than done. But yeah, I don't think necessarily the way to go for them is to open up, because then I think that weakens their massive strength so far. So yeah, they're in a little bit of trouble. But Hiroshima just go from strength to strength. They could be 1 point off Kashima and Kawasaki if they win their game in hand in midweek.
Yeah, most definitely. And yeah, I mean, I know Sam probably couldn't wait to talk about Mitsuta again, but that's probably pretty ordinary podcast hosting from me there, because we obviously wax lyrical about Mitsuta on a weekly basis. And Scott, it's your first appearance of the season proper, so I probably should have come to you first to get your thoughts on one of our new favourites, and also on the impact that Michael Skibber's had. Again, Sam and I have talked so much about it in the past few weeks, the past couple of months. But what have you seen from him and the way he's been able to reshape a team that was, literally second from bottom when he came into the country, and he steered them all the way up to fourth. And as Sam says, they could be within touching distance of even second if they can win their game in hand on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we were talking in pre-season, there were some reports from someone who'd seen him in a previous spell. Someone was perhaps maybe a little bit unsure how he'd fit in. I've obviously never seen any of the teams that he coached before, so I had no idea. But he's done a fantastic job, and this is the point that I was touching on at the top, the difference that coaching makes, because it's essentially, okay, Mitsuda aside, but basically the same squad that was there under Jofuku for a couple of years under the caretaker for the start of the season. But you see the, I think, yeah, as much as anything, it's a change in mentality, which then translates to a change in tempo. And I think in that basic regard, you look at what's happened at Tosu and you look at what's happened at Hiroshima, and I think they're very similar, because a lot of the positive elements that they've been able to create going forward have come from an ability to win the ball back when they lose it as quickly as they can. And I think, yeah, Hiroshima and from my point, Tosu, even perhaps to a greater level, have really come with the intensity that they play with. You know, he made some big calls to take players out that weren't going to fit that kind of pressure. Or Aoyama left. I think Shiatani started the first couple of games basically as a six. Then Nogami was dropped and he's dropped a bit deeper. Maybe he's a little bit better in that role. You've seen kind of Kashua phased out from the left wing role as well. So you've got two younger kind of wing backs, so Fuji on the right, Higashi on the left, who are intense in their pressuring, as are Morishima and Mitsuda in between. And I think it's that element that really has laid the base for what they've done going forward as well, the ability that they have to win things back quickly. And that's, as much as anything, that's a real mentality kind of thing. So I think, yeah, the work that Kenta Kawai is doing at Tosum and the work that Skibbe is doing here is really good. The one question I still have is that most of the goals, I think, are not really coming from the striker. They've flirted a little bit with one up top, two up top, and I don't know if they really have an out-and-out option. I've really seen much prior to this of Nassim Ben Khalifa. I don't know if he's the answer. I don't know if he's really, doesn't look to me like a natural nine either, but he was obviously someone that Skibbe had worked with before, thinks he can do a job for him. He's looked an okay player, but I'm not sure he's necessarily a great deal better than the options that they had there. So I think if they could get a real out-and-out nine and perhaps lessen the goal-scoring responsibility a little bit on the deeper kind of midfielders, they could be an absolute genuine threat to go on and win the league. So it's fantastic. Again, it goes to the coach, the tweaks that he's made tactically, but I think as much as anything, the tweaks that he's made in terms of the mentality and the intensity that they play at.
Indeed. And long may it continue. They obviously have a golden opportunity to build on their fourth straight win against an off-colour Gunma Osaka on Wednesday night. And then they face Iwate at home on the weekend before a crunch clash away at current leaders Yokohama F. Marinos in match day 20. So that is, definitely a mouth-watering game in prospect. Just before we move off this game, Sam, we did have a question from Daniel Hawkins on Fukuoka, obviously the team he supports. And I guess it's fair to say he's slightly concerned about the way they're travelling. Luckily for Daniel, they're facing FC Tokyo this coming weekend, so I'm sure things will be looking up after this coming Saturday, Daniel. But, he's slightly concerned about their defence. Sam, they've conceded six in their last two league games. Daniel wonders, is the usually solid defence starting to show signs of weakness? We mentioned how good their three centre-backs are. Well, the manager decided to play them all from the start on Saturday, Nara, Groly and Mia. As the result shows, it didn't quite work out. But, do you think he deserves credit for trying a new formation, or should he have just stuck with and held faith a little bit longer with his four at the back instead of switching to three?
To be honest, the four has generally worked in terms of they're not conceded too many goals. They weren't great against Shimizu, conceded three there, but otherwise it would be 13 and 7 or whatever it was. I can't remember, but it was pretty good. But going into that, they go to a three, which they're trying to match up against Hiroshima. And I hate it when teams just decide to match up and think, oh, if we match up, they're not going to work against us, because Hiroshima play that system all the time. They're very used to it. They probably set up against it quite a lot in training. They know what they're doing and they were able to take advantage of it. So I thought that was a poor decision. I think I praised them earlier in the season for not doing that. I think it might have been against Gamba, I can't remember, or Sapporo, and they went on and won that game. So yeah, I don't necessarily agree that they should have changed up the system, because I don't think it's the defenders that are the issue. So I think it's they've changed their mentality ever so slightly. They're not an all-out attacking team by any stretch of the imagination, but generally they've set up very defensively and looked to hit on the counter. And it's worked to a degree, but they've found themselves dropping towards the relegation places. They saw Shimizu, I think, last week as an opportunity to take advantage of a team that weren't in great form. They've not had much time with their manager. They thought maybe if we attack them a little bit more, we might get 3 points here. It backfired against them. Shimizu played very well. And yeah, I think that's what's kind of ruffled a few feathers, conceding three there. I think there's a little bit of panic. I don't think he's 100% certain in the way he wants to play. And it all stems from a lack of ability going forward and taking their chances. They don't have anyone that is likely to score too many goals. I think Yamagishi had a small purple patch, but really you can't rely on him. And Lukian, the big hope that they had for taking on that burden, has not fired. So I think they have to sort out. I think their defence is going to falter by trying to overcompensate for their attack. So I think it's vital for them that they sort that attack out, try and get someone that scores goals, and that can then allow them to just sit in a little bit deeper and rely on their defence a little bit more. Because, yeah, I think the overcompensation is going to cost them, and they're in a really perilous position at the moment. And if they don't adjust that, I think they're in serious danger of going down.
Yeah, it doesn't look too great at the moment, does it? Yeah, four without a win now. And, well, they're in the bottom six, 13th on the 19 points, just a two ahead of second from bottom, Shimizu, who are a level on points with Gunma Osaka. Daniel did ask another question, Scott. Again, typical for him, slightly tongue-in-cheek, but, I mean, we're going to have to address it as we move on to FC Tokyo's latest horror show. Daniel mentions that, yes, Avispa and Tokyo conceded a combined 8 goals over the weekend. So he wonders, can we look forward to a goal fest in Saturday's J-Talk Derby at Ajinomoto Stadium? Of course, if you need a reminder, Fukuoka beat Tokyo 5-1 at the Best Denki Stadium earlier on in the season. I would say Tokyo would be out for revenge, but I mean, the form they've been in since the international break doesn't fill me with any sort of confidence whatsoever. So, yeah, let's move on to... I said though Tosu were a Tokyo's bogey team last week, and I laid out all the stats, but I must admit I never saw a 5-0 defeat coming. And you said yourself in the green room, the first half wasn't that bad. Tokyo had good chances for Adailton before Yuto Iwasaki scored a 25-yard screamer to put Tosu ahead on the half hour. And then a minute before the break, Ryoma Watanabe should have done better, but Park made a good low save. But then once Diogo made it 2-0, not the right Diogo, of course, who wasn't even in the Tokyo squad. Once the Tosu defender Diogo made it 2-0 3 minutes into the second half, the rest of it was just a procession, and Tokyo just had their bottoms handed to them.
Yes, that's right. And I think there's issues with Tokyo, and no question. I'm not sure that 5-0 was really completely reflective of the thing as a whole. But I think more in this game, it's more a question we can get onto the issues and the problems with Tokyo, if you like. But again, I think the real credit here should go to Tosu, who I know I've talked up in preseason, and I keep coming back to them because, I really think Kenta Kawai is not just one of the best young Japanese coaches going around, but I think he's shown this year to be one of the best, regardless of age. The job that he's done with this squad is fantastic. And again, it's the development of players that you haven't seen do what they're doing. They're playing basically without a number nine as well, shamefully, because the golden boot, the rightful golden boot owner in Mr. Kakita, when he gets on the pitch, all he does is score goals. But we'll come to that. So he's basically playing with three number tens and making do. But the goals are coming from all sorts of elements. The work he's done. Ino's been missing the last two or three games, but him on the right and Iwasaki on the left, the way that they've really blossomed under Kawhi has been very impressive. He's done an amazing job with really modest defensive options as well. Loads of injuries, lots of players shuffling in and out of that. But the point that I keep coming back to is the intensity of the press right from the opening minute all the way through until the 90. And as they have been in most of their games, almost from the very first game, of this season. They've been so impressive, and it's not just pressing for the sake of it, helter skelter kind of stuff, but players are reading trig as well. Someone knows, okay, when they're going on this side, I'm going to sit back and tuck in and readjust, and then they'll do the same on the other side. So they're reading the cues, they're reading the triggers, and they're pressing very effectively, but at a high tempo, and they're maintaining the tempo of it as well. And not either with necessarily a squad of young players that you would think, but you know, guys like a Yuji Ono, for example, have bought fully into the way that it's working. Horigome has been excellent. Kikuchi earlier in the season, Honda when he's fit, coming in and out of the squad. Everyone is playing with the same mentality, and they're playing with the same intensity. And because you look at the squad on paper, and this is a squad of players that I don't know should maybe be battling for relegation, but it's the intensity out of possession that allows them to have the so many times in this game that they won, boom, you know, they've lost possession 1, 2, 3 seconds, boom, they've got it back immediately. And Tokyo were rattled by it. They didn't know how to react. They couldn't find a space to play into. The point that I've made consistently about Slovic and the ball at his feet is still a problem, because I think he's really damaging Tokyo's starting position. One in every three of his passes when he's playing out are going to the wrong foot of the defender. So instead of being in front of the ball and being able to play forward, you've got to drop back. There was one incident with Morishige and another one with Nagatomo where passes from Slovic have just gone completely to the wrong foot and have ended up going at the touchline. So structurally, the issues there for Tokyo are plain for everyone to see, and Tosu took full advantage of it. Really pressing high, pressing tight, and winning the ball so quickly, and that allowed them to be in the position to score the goals that they did.
Yeah, I'm just going to move on to FC Tokyo. I know, obviously, you don't necessarily want to talk about them and their result here, but a 5-0 result, you have to always take stock of where the team is at this point. And previously, like, Pucci's came in, he's obviously got this way of playing, a new style that he wants to implement. And we've seen that a lot in previous seasons. If you go back to 2018 with Ange Postecoglou, he was obviously changing the play there, and Marinos did occasionally get whacked. They got beaten, some horrible results, but obviously the correct decision was to carry on with Ange and pay dividends for previous season. Last year, and you can debate Ricardo Rodriguez if you like, but at the start of that season, they got battered a few times and then ended up doing a lot better towards the end of that season. Do you take this as just one of those things that is going to happen with the way that Pucci wants to play? And can you see signs of the way that Tokyo have approached games this season that maybe give a couple of transfer windows a bit more time, that the way that Pucci wants to play is going to work for FC Tokyo? Or do you think there are greater concerns about how he's approached things and maybe isn't the guy for FC Tokyo? I'll come back to you, Scott.
I think it's really similar to basically the last two seasons that he had with Niigata, where they started really well and then they tended to fade towards the middle of the season. The difference with Niigata was he had time to build the squad and the players that he wants. I maintain that all the off-season recruitment was done by the club rather than him. The kind of players that were bought in, Matsui aside, I don't think fit the way that he wants to play. And I think the real problem has been the foreigners, because none of them, I mean, not a single one fits what he wants to play, and which is, as we know, as we saw with Niigata, again, high intensity, but particularly with pace and mobility through the wide and the central areas. And if you look at the foreigners, no one's calling Adalton quick or mobile. No one's calling Diego Oliveira quick or mobile, and no one's calling Leandro anything other than a purveyor of fine NFTs. And then Trevisan has been injured in and out of the whole thing. You've now lost Ogawa. I don't know whether that's a net loss or not, because I'm quite a big fan of Kassif if he can get up to speed. But the first transfer window, which he had, was always going to be a crucial one. I maintain that he didn't have a say in the signings, which is a really concerning aspect from the club. And my personal reading on it is that he's counting down the days until the contracts are up for the foreigners. And he can get them out of the door and get the kind of plays with the kind of qualities. And you see, okay, it's someone like Nagai who's a limited player, but the one thing that he does offer is pace and mobility. The same with Ryoma Watanabe, who's been used in all sorts of positions as a right back, as a central midfielder, as a right winger in this game. But at least he has he doesn't have maybe the greatest technical qualities, but he has pace and mobility. So you can see the kind of players that he wants. I think the squad doesn't have them at the moment. I think we need to give him time, but the time's limited by the contract that the foreigners have, because I don't think it's going to change with domestic signings. It has to be really all of the foreigners out and a whole collection that can fit tactically the way that he wants to play, particularly with the physical requirements of it brought in.
Yeah, I mean, I could answer that as well, Sam, but the listeners are tired of me, like, tripping over my words trying to explain my thoughts on Tokyo. And, especially after a result like this, I mean, I don't think there's a lot that I can really add. I'm just, extremely frustrated. Nowhere near giving up on Pucci by any stretch. But, I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me that, before the international break, you can beat the then-leaders 3-1 at home and look really, really good in doing so. And then, you come back after 3 weeks off, and goodness knows what they were doing. They certainly weren't ready for the Shonan game and were flat as a tack. Then, went out of the Emperor's Cup in midweek, albeit in extra time, but away to a J2 side, and then had chances in the first half, didn't take them. Again, that's probably a mark of the quality of the squad and of the players at his disposal. And then they've been swept aside, and the only silver lining for me is that Fuchi Honda got a good goal in the second half, and I'm sure Scott was made up that his golden boot Smokey Yuki Kakita bagged yet another brace after coming on.
Goals per minute
tremendous. Tremendous. And I mean, the last one was just gifted to him by the departing Ryoya Ogawa, who doesn't know how to close down. No matter how much you try and pump it into him. So I, for one, am not sad at all to see him leave. I know he has a lot of fans amongst the support who'll be disappointed. But let's get somebody else into the team and give them a go
Just quickly, Ben, the start of next season from this 11 that lined up here, I reckon, and I'm not sure about Slovic. I think Slovic and I think Mutsky, I think they're the only two from this 11 that start next season.
Yeah, possibly.
And maybe Abe as well. But it's gonna be a completely different squad. So I think we need to give him a transfer window. But the bigger issues that I have is historically and it seems still the same way that the club's being run, because if the club's making signings that doesn't fit the philosophy of the coach and the way that the coach wants to play, I mean, what are we dealing with here? So that the squad's been criminally mismanaged for so many years, and it's this point. How can you be? You look across town at Verdi, and the number of players that they've constantly got coming through their youth academy, and they're all really refined, polished, young, mobile, technically gifted footballers, and we just can't seem to get anyone to come out of the academy like that. So it's clearly something systemically wrong, and not just at the top, but it goes all the way to the bottom. So, I don't know how much things are going to change quickly at the top, but certainly giving the coach some kind of say over the players that he wants is a good start.
Well, I just can't see him being given carte blanche, though. I mean, we talk about the way the squad's been mismanaged. We know the club's record at cutting dead wood, and they just don't do it. So, I can't imagine that there'll be mass outs from the squad in the off season. They'll try and get a few out and maybe try and just ease them out of the picture entirely. But I can't see wholesale changes. Hopefully you'll be able to get three or four in that he really likes and can see fitting in from the start of next season. But considering Tokyo's history at piecing a squad together, I think we'll believe it when we see it, won't we, Scott? But so we'll move off Tokyo. Again, full credit to Tosu for a tremendous victory, and it saw them skip back up to sixth in the table. Tokyo down to eighth after a second straight league defeat. So let's move on then. And there were some important 1-0 victories as we begin to round up the match day. We'll do the next two together, Sam, if that's okay, as Urawa moved out of the bottom six for the first time since match day 8 after a dramatic 9 90th minute winner from David Moberg saw them defeat bottom club Vissel Kobe 1-0 away at the Novara Stadium. While at in Kyoto, Shonan moved out of the bottom three for the first time all season after Shuto Machino scored yet again, getting the winner this week in the 87th minute for his sixth goal in six league games. I think I actually gave that stat last week in error. It was actually 5-5 last week, but thankfully he's bailed me out by scoring again, Machino. He's now gone joint second with Peter Utaka, leaving Yuki Kakita in his wake in the race for the J1. The J1 Golden Boot. He's now got 8 for the season, much, you know, absolutely tremendous. And, yeah, just 2 goals behind ISA Wader, who we think might be heading off in the summer. So, yeah, Reds, a dramatic winner. And, well, they were both dramatic late winners, weren't they, Sam? And huge for Reds and Belmari, respectively.
Yeah, and I mean, the Kobe Reds game absolutely needed that because it was dross.
That was one of the worst games of the season. That was absolutely dire.
You look at the supposed quality on the pitch from both sides, and they put on what was, yeah, dreadful. Both teams looked really, really poor. It was separated by a well-hit free kick, but it's not into the corner. I think a goalkeeper worth his salt will have got that. I mean, it's far from me, a 5'7" guy sat behind his computer desk, to tell a professional goalkeeper how to do his job. But... try moving a little bit. So he got kind of caught his feet. He didn't jump up anywhere near. If he sidesteps twice, gets a good purchase on the bounce, he gets the ball. It's an easy save, I think, for any goalkeeper that's competent, but Maikawa is not. And Kobe just were absolutely dreadful. It was summed up by the first minute where Osaki has come into the back line and he loses the ball in his penalty area after about 20 seconds.
It was 12, Sam. Juncker hit the post, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Sam, that wasn't the low light of that game, though. The low light of that game was Hiroki Sakai's attempted throw-in.
Okay, yes, yeah, fair enough. There was that, and then I remember Iwanami set up for a free kick, I think, just before the hour mark. Why he's taking a free kick, I don't know, and he just bobbled it over the wall. It was like, just what is going on? Why, how are these two ACL representatives for this league? But yeah, really, really poor. Kobe now, what are they... 8 points from total safety. It's just gone so badly for them. I think we're going to be in for an interesting transfer window. I think they're already signing Stefan Mugosa, who is the current top goal scorer in the K-League. Where he fits in with Osako and Muto, I'm not sure, but they're going to try that. And Nana Saino as well is the rumour today, which I think is a good signing, but unfortunately for... you know, I don't know why you'd want to go to Vissel Kobe, but at least that makes sense. Otherwise, Magosa, yeah, he scored a lot of goals for Incheon, but I just think it's going to unbalance that side. Not that it's particularly well balanced anyway, but I think the key issue is goalkeeper and centre back, and it looks like they're probably not going to address either of those. So yeah, they're in trouble, which is great fun for most of the league, but not for them. And Reds didn't look a great deal better, but yeah, Shonan a better story. Machino obviously is in sensational form. It's so vital for Shonan because otherwise I don't think there's a goal left in that team if Machino doesn't score it. And they played quite well here. I think the goal that they scored was very well worked in terms of Yonemoto's slide draw pass. I think Hatta coming back into the team after his under 21 exploits is very important. It was a great run from him, perfectly timed. He doesn't just blast it across the box like many would. He sees Machino, great pass, lovely finish. And yeah, it's really good for Shonan. They've got some confidence built up. And look at the gap now. They're only 10th Reds on 21. Shonan are on 19th. One more, two more wins. They could find themselves in the heady heights of mid-table. So unbelievable. The league is so exciting at that relegation dogfight. We're all fans of the dogfight. I think we're in for a great one this season. But yeah, it's great for Shonan. But Kobe, just awful, awful.
Yeah, I mean, this is not doing our chances of finishing under an hour any good, Scott.
We've got three minutes. We're almost there.
I'm going to have to come to you for thoughts on both Kobe especially, but also Reds, who have been hugely disappointing as well as they work their way up to 10th in the table. But yes, they're obviously miles off the top off the top spot. They're part of the logjam in mid-table, but yeah, they're much closer to bottom than they are to top spot. So they've been frustrating for their fans as well. But I mean, where do you begin with Kobe? We've struggled on a weekly basis to try and make sense of it and just presume that it will start to fix itself. But it appears 18 games in that, that's just not going to happen, is it?
Well, yeah, I don't know where you maybe begin with Kobe is giving a call to Massimo Figadenti. Goes against every fibre of my being to say it. But they're in a situation now where it's not working with Lotina. And I think I've mentioned to you guys before that I heard, people around Verdi when he was there, just in terms of the positioning on the pitch. He's divided the pitch up apparently in training sessions into like 25 different quadrants or whatever, and players were being fined if they strayed during the match, if they strayed outside of the particular quadrant and went in. And from what I heard, it was an absolute nightmare. And I've heard the very similar things about him from other clubs. So given the way that he operates in terms of this absolute rigidity of the system, it was always going to be the kind of appointment that should have taken time, and I don't think he was the firefighter that came in. And to say they were dreadful is being kind in this match. They were an absolute rabble, and again, I just wonder if it's the strictness of the methodology, particularly around the starting position and the players, coming off completely different tactical instructions prior to that, because they didn't seem to know where they should be in terms of the starting position and then in terms of the movement. If someone's cutting in, who's dropping, who's covering, who's pushing up, the basic tactical elements, they seem to be either unsure of what to do, scared of what to do, and they were an absolute mess. To see the way that Iniesta, the first time in his entire career he's become cantankerous, he's arguing with players, arguing with officials. The look on his face when he came off, it's like, what the hell am I doing? Wasting my time with this rabble. And again, it's not that the players are bad. It's not that the squad is bad at all. I mean, you've got, current internationals in the squad. The issues all come down to coaching. And I really think that they've got to move, and they've got to move him as soon as possible. And I believe it could happen. And the firefighting that they're in now, again, we know there's issues with foreigners that are still getting visas and access. Obviously, Figadenti's got one. I just wouldn't be surprised if there was another week or two like this that maybe, we see Figadenti, and there's obviously a break in July around the EAFF as well. And it wouldn't surprise me if they moved again and maybe did that, make that change. And I would argue, as I did at the start of the season, I understand that I got a bit of flack on your private chat group that I'm not a part of from some Urawa fans who were daring me question the tactical nous and acumen of Mr. Rodriguez, particularly around the use of foreign players, which I think has been proven that I was right the longer that things went on. I mean, what's going on? We know Juncker's been injured in and out. Apparently it was clear that he wasn't fit and right to go, because he's injured himself again 7 minutes whatever it was into the game here. You've signed Schalk, he's in and out of the squad. Where is he? You've signed Moberg, he's in and out of the squad, starting on the bench. The complete lack of characters around the squad, again, is something that I've touched on with Rodriguez at his other stops as well. You can argue the player, I don't know, whatever, but someone like Makino, a leader, gone. And now what have you got? You've got a collection of like 21-year-old, 1.68 kind of technical wasps that run around at the ball, but they're all dribbling and trying to do their own thing. Again, I don't understand the tactical structure that's going on. I don't think that there's any, aside from Iwao, any characters on the pitch to insert discipline. And it seems like he's got, like I said, 24 different versions of the exact same young, pliable Japanese player who he throws in. And whether it's him or the club, have signed these foreigners and for some reason they're not using them, then come on, I agree with Sam, the positioning, the keeper should have saved the free kick, okay, but it's gone on and he's made the difference. And you saw in the post-match interview again, he said, well, you know, I'm kind of good at free kicks, you know, I'm happy that I was on the pitch at the time to be able to do it. And so again, is there messaging coming through? Like I've said consistently, the absence of strong characters, the absence of faith in foreign players, and this all comes back to coaching. We can also start on the dodgy Chinese characters, the tattoo on the back of David Moberg as well. But I think this is a real coaching failure at both clubs. And yeah, absolutely firm that both coaches really should be moved on as soon as possible, because both these squads are very well resourced, very well stacked, and have very good players. And in my opinion, they're both being let down by coaches.
Wow, okay, that's a big call. You're actually calling for Rodriguez's head there, all right?
So. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Are you disagreeing with me? The squad's here for what reason?
Well, yeah, I mean,
they're here because of the way it's been mismanaged. There's no other reason. It's not like they haven't, you know, conceded 57 unlucky goals. They're here because of coaching.
Yep. Well, I can't see Reds making that call, whether it's justified.
Can.
Okay, fair enough. What, if they lose the next couple, perhaps?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, I mean, really, this was the worst game of this season, one of the worst games of the past couple of years. It was absolutely diabolical. And bar a few, you know, brief Indian summers, they've been dreadful all season. And there's absolutely no reason for the way that they should be playing. And as I say, what are the other issues that are going on at the club? What on God's earth is and has at every stop that he's been at going on with the foreigners and the lack of use of them? What is going on with the shearing of anyone with a shred of leadership outside of Iwao in this team? Who's there to pick them up in moments where they need it? There's no one, because like I said, they've got 25 versions of the same wispy Japanese technician, and that's it.
Yep. Okay. Well, yeah, I guess while they're still in the ACL, I wouldn't have expected them to make a move like that. We'll wait and see. The dog's just come over to say hello and knocked my earphones off. So, yeah, apologies for that if that made a noise as my microphone fell to the table. Sorry about that, listeners. That's probably a good indication that we need to move on, I guess, Scott, off Reds. Before we move off these two games, though, Sam, you were worried about Kyoto last week, and I guess that's only been more reinforced by their performance here again. Yes, they've failed to score in five of their last seven now. And yes, that win against Kawasaki in the last game before the international break, well, it just looks like an oasis in the form table, doesn't it? Yes, aside from that one win, they're certainly racking up the losses. And perhaps, yes, as you feared, their slide down the table has begun.
Yeah, I do fear for them. And it's not necessarily, I think Cho is a very good coach, but I don't necessarily think he's got the resources necessarily to have them fighting above themselves so much. I think he surprised a few teams at the beginning of the season. They got some very key points, which still could prove crucial. But I think, yeah, they're dropping now. If Utaka isn't scoring and Kawasaki was out of this game, I think they are really struggling for quality. They're picking up a few more injuries. Takeda, who's been a general starter, he was out. Matsuda also. And yeah, once they've lost a couple of players, I think there's a real lack of quality here. Shonan are a team you have to beat at home if you want to be staying up in this division. They didn't do that. They didn't really look like scoring. I think Shonan could have had a second match and it was very close to being onside early in the first half. They could have been down earlier. And just generally, they didn't look too threatening at all. And Shonan, as I say, are a team you have to be threatening against, and you have to be taking taking 3 points from these games. So, yeah, just a worry for them. They 3 points now above relegation, dropping quite quickly. Maybe they can make some reinforcements in July, but yeah, I think they're sinking. The only thing they've got with them is there's a barrier of a few. There are a few bad teams in this division. It might just about save them. Maybe Chosen Alps will get a few points and get them back, getting a few results. But generally, yeah, this was another kind of abject display, I thought.
Yeah, most definitely. And I forgot to mention, of course, that, yeah, Reds also lost in the Emperor's Cup in midweek to Thespa Kusatsu Gunma, as did Sapporo. They were the fifth and final team to go out to lower league opposition. Sapporo suffered defeat at the hands of Kofu of J2 on Wednesday. But it appeared for them in the league. Sam, I'll come back to you for Consadole. It was just a matter of having Takanori Sugano back in goal that made the difference. They conceded 15 in their last three league games, and indeed 16 in four while Sugano was out. But yes, stick him back between the sticks, and things were okay for Consadole at home on Sunday afternoon before Sapporo's biggest home crowd in 2.5 years of just under 21,600. And ultimately, it was Yoshiaki Kormai who was involved in the build-up to the goal and then finished off the move with a lovely header from a first-time cross from Takuro Kaneko.
Yeah, well, Sugano absolutely helped. Made a couple of very good saves. Gamba didn't get through too often, but when they did, he was there to save them. Well, Gamba were really poor again going forward. If you can't create a lot of chances against Sapporo, I think you're in trouble. And yeah, they really didn't here. Yamami got on the ball, occasionally got involved, and he was the one that was creating a few chances. Shige missed one fairly early on, but yeah, generally they didn't create too much and then cause their own problems at the back, because they're trying to press a little bit, but it's kind of random. And Miura was the worst at this, with just running towards the ball with no real positional sense. It left so many gaps in behind, and Sapporo have very good players in those attacking midfield positions that can play the passes through, and if you allow a massive amount of space, they are going to take advantage. It took them a few attempts to do that. Xavier was offside once. There were various other ones where they didn't quite take their chances, but eventually they managed to get through. I thought Gamba is defensively just awful. The goal, Komai is just allowed to walk through midfield. I don't know why Mitsuki Saito isn't in that midfield to start. I think he's him and Darwin previously had a very good partnership, but yeah, Alcano was in there. Darwin doesn't cover himself in glory in this passage of play either, but yeah, Saito I think absolutely should be in there as that kind of terrier. He's going to put a tackle and he's going to do something, but yeah, this was really poor. And that centre-back pairing as well, if you look at it on paper, you think Miura and Shoji, yeah, former internationals, you can probably rely on them, but both of them were absolutely out of sorts again in this game, and it's not the first time. And I think Kwon is maybe slightly better, but they've had so many issues with those players. And I don't know if it's just the setup. I don't know if it's them not really focusing, but yeah, it's just really poor. And Higashiguchi bailed them out a lot in this game, as he has done in previous seasons. But yeah, there were so many issues. If you can't create chances and you were allowing such attacks against you, they're in, relegation places now. I mean, the J-League's looking a bit like 2012.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, unhappy memories there for Gunma Osaka and Vissel Kobe, no question at all. And Scott, well, yeah, Gunma are looking listless, aren't they? And, Sapporo steadied the ship, I guess. They'd be letting in goals for fun, as we know. But, Sugano proved to be the difference. And, we're obviously been talking about some of the underperforming teams so far this season, Reds and Kobe front and centre in the last game we talked about. But, yeah, Gunma are guilty of the same. And they've not really appearing to go anywhere at all under Tomohiro Katanosaka, are they?
Yeah, and again, it's not because of lack of quality in the squad. And I come back, as I throughout the thing again, to coaching and organizational issues. They played what was essentially a 4-4-2 here. They've played all sorts of variants throughout, which I think doesn't help in terms of, okay, it's good to have flexibility in the option to adjust either before or within games, but it seems that that he hasn't settled on a constant approach, and within that the positioning of players as well, which have really been moved around constantly. And I think what you've seen and what you saw a lot in this game is again these kind of players, the kind of players that Rodriguez would salivate over, guys like Yamami, Jiro Nakamura, more of these wispy 158 centimeter technicians that will almost certainly, if Rodriguez does stay, end up at Reds. But the kind of players that were almost being given the ball and say, go and do, you know, what you want with it. And you saw both of them on repeated occasions. You get the ball and really in tight spaces with two or three players around, just basically dribbling, you know, into traffic, and it was never going to work. So, yeah, they have real issues and real concerns. The way tactically that they're set up, the use of players within the various systems, yeah, the drop off in form of Shoji since his return from Europe has been dramatic. He's now in his beatnik hipster poet phase with you know, the waspy long hair and laconic movement, arguing with players, all this kind of stuff. Yeah, Miura is a problem at the back as well. You've played Takao in all sorts of different positions. Kurokawa's played some. Fujihara's played some. I agree with Sam on Kwan. I don't know if he's an upgrade on any of it. So there's issues at the back. But, yeah, I think that there's more issues with stability across the squad. Okay, maybe they lack a number nine. Doan has been an absolute beat. Did you have him in your midfield of the season?
It was definitely mentioned, but he didn't make the final squad.
No, yeah, he's the best Doan outside of Northern Australia. He's been an absolutely. You didn't get my Darwin joke?
I see what you did there. Yeah.
Thank you.
Didn't want to interrupt your flow. Sorry.
That's right. No, but he's been a fantastic player. I don't know if Saito's been certainly not as good as he was when we saw him leave. He's obviously had injuries and whatnot, but yeah, there's a lot of work to be done at Gumbra, and they're absolutely right in this mix for relegation.
Yes, indeed. And it was also a frustrating weekend for Gumba's city rivals at Cerezo. They hosted the Miguel Lotina derby against Shimizu. Of course, Lotina, much missed by supporters of both Cerezo and Shimizu from his time in charge of both of those clubs. And, well, two Cerezo defenders scored in this one-all draw. It was Matej Jonic who opened the scoring, but unfortunately into his own net 10 minutes before halftime when he slid in to cut out a Kenta Nishizawa cross, but only succeeded in steering the ball past Kim Jin-hyun for an Ogi. But yes, Cerezo equalised with 15 minutes left through young defender Kakeru Funaki, who steered home a superb header from Tokuma Suzuki's corner for his first J1 goal. I guess we can wrap this up fairly quickly, Sam. The stats were very heavily in Cerezo's favour. The J-League had it 17 shots to 3, while Google went even further, 23 to 4. Goodness gracious
DAZN,
me.
DAZN had it at 22 to 2.
All right. OK, so who can you believe these days? Obviously, a disappointing start to the game for Cerezo, Sam, when they lost Hiroshi Kiyotake early doors with what looked to be a pretty badly sprained ankle. I guess ultimately they'll be frustrated they didn't come away with all 3 points against the team who is now second from bottom with the Shonan rocketing up the table.
Yeah, they will be. But I think Kiyotake's injury is the key part of that because, yes, they had a lot of shots, but not many clear-cut chances. Gonda was never really that tested. And once you haven't got Kiyotake and his quality and creativity, and Harakawa wasn't in the side either, I think they're really lacking there. They've played Tameda left wing, who's okay at just whipping a ball in, but not much more than that. Maekuma has had a good season, but he's really a right-back, or at least a bit more defensively. So when they played Kato came on, they played two centre-forwards, but nobody really to serve them properly other than just to whip balls in. So, yeah, I think they had a lot of possession, but not really that player that's going to unlock the door. They only scored through a set-piece, a good header from Funaki, but a set-piece nonetheless. And, yeah, they fell behind. I think as soon as I went to bat for Jonic, ever since then, he's conceded a sloppy penalty and now conceded an own goal. So I might as well shut up about him and let him go back to being a good defender. But yeah, Shimizu didn't really offer too much. They weren't as good as they were the previous week. Cerezo controlled it. But yeah, just that lack of creativity was the reason they didn't go on to win the game.
Yeah, all right then. So we'll finish up there from match day 18 and look ahead to what's coming up in the next few days and indeed the next week in J1. Scott, we mentioned a couple of times that Hiroshima play their game in hand away at Gumba on Wednesday night. So I guess a potential banana skin, but the way that Michael Skibbers had them prepared throughout the last few months, I think we can and Gumba can feel wary that I think a full strength Hiroshima team is going to turn up fully prepared and in the form they're in, you'd expect them to put their stamp all over Gumba and, as we said, rise to within a point of the teams in second and third.
Yeah, this is one of the things that we often see with new foreign coaches coming into the J-League, that they tend to buck the trend in terms of not rotating as much, and certainly that's been the case with Skibbe right the way through through the Louvain, through the Emperor's Cup as well. They've been pretty much the only side, I think, in the Emperor's Cup last week he made maybe just one or two changes with one of the fullbacks and one of the central midfielders, but essentially it's been the core 11 that he's played the whole way through the season. You've got another issue now with this is another full round of midweek league games coming up next week as well. So this is often the issue where new foreign coaches in Japan get found out. They think that they can, in terms of physical capacity, probably get away with doing it, just looking at the schedule as they would in Europe. Obviously, things are much different over here with the heat and humidity, which is already brutal in Tokyo. So I just wonder, if Skibbe doesn't adjust his philosophy, we maybe could see Hiroshima lose a couple of players. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does now with this run of whatever they've got, four matches in 2 weeks or whatever coming up. But yeah, on the balance of things, you would think you think that Hiroshima are going to take them to the cleaners.
Indeed, and their conditions have certainly flipped, haven't they, Scott, in the past week? Hey, it was, as we said last week, it just poured rain all over the country, and then rainy season decided to stop, somebody flicked a switch, and then, yes, the oven was turned up to 350 degrees. It was absolutely roasting across the country, and it has been for well over a week now. So Scott raised an interesting point there about Hiroshima and whether Skibbe is going to have to flip things around a little bit, because they play on Wednesday, then they host Iwata on Saturday, as I said earlier, before that match day 20 game. And Scott's right again, it's in midweek, of course it's in the cool, in inverted commas, of the evening, but the match day 20 game away at Yokohama F Marino. I guess Skibbe could be forgiven for looking ahead slightly towards that, but with Gamba and Iwata on the slate in the meantime. But I imagine he'll have them as well prepared as he can do. But I guess there is a slight danger that he might be looking to save his real guns for that Yokohama showdown.
Yeah, he might do, but I don't think he will. I think if you're going to play your full strength team pretty much in the Emperor's Cup, then you're going to do it in league matches. And I think the issue is there's not a great deal of depth in this side. If you make a couple of changes, you might get away with it. If you make wholesale changes, I think it's quite poor. I think there's quite a drop off, and which is why I think we've been asked many weeks now, are Hiroshima title contenders? And I just think because of the schedule, because of the limited options in that squad, I think that's where they'll fall down. Either they have to rotate and are weaker because of it, or he burns these players into the ground and they'll eventually drop off. So I think that's where the issues is. I think he'll carry on as it is. I think Gam will face their first team, Jubilee will likewise, and Marinos will as well. And Marinos might get the better of that game because they have the ability to rotate, and they've got very good players that will come in as well. So that I think that's going to be the issue for them, but I don't think it's necessarily going to help Gamba or Jubilee. I don't think they can think, okay, we're going to get a slightly weaker Hiroshima side because they might have their eye on other games. I think he's just going to play them as long as they will go, and hope that gets them through. But I think it will see them drop off towards the end of the year.
Yeah, fair enough then. Okay, so to Saturday's match day 19 then. All games played on Saturday, the 2nd of July. The top three are all away from home. Well, Hiroshima hosts Iwata. So as we exit this episode, Sam, what is Sam's pick of the weekend?
Sam's pick of the weekend.
My pick of the weekend is the reverse fixture of the first false dawn of Vissel Kobe, where they beat Tosu 4-0 earlier in the season. I have no idea what this guy, looking at the performances this weekend, you might expect the reverse scoreline. I think this is a really interesting match. Kobe have to start doing something sooner or later. They've seen maybe Tosu are a team that they can do it against. They might have some confidence from that, but Tosu obviously have their confidence up. They'll want revenge from that. I think this could be a really good open game. And I'm not going to call it there, but that's my pick of it. There are other various fixtures. I think Gamba Urara might try and compete with Urara and Kobe as the worst game of the season, so I'd avoid that one. But Tosu Kobe for me. Of course, the patron derby.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, Scott and I will be watching through our fingers when FC Tokyo hosts Fukuoka at 6 o'clock on Saturday. I better throw it over to the guest before we leave. Then, Scott, do you have a pick of the match day for our listeners to check out? Scott's pick of the match day.
Well, every match day I do the exact same thing. Firstly, I watch Marinos. Then I watch Tosu, because they're the two most entertaining teams in the league. So I'll be doing the exact same. The problem is now with all these games kicking off, I do like Sam does. I often have two or three screens going at the same time. But yeah, screen number one will be Yokohama traveling to Shimizu, and screen number two will be Tosu against Vissel, because they're the two tactically best teams in the league. So they should be one and two on the list every week.
Very good, very good. All right, then. So we didn't quite manage to do it in under an hour, but...
we did it in an hour and 23. Extreme.
But, so, yes, that's a tremendous effort from all concerned. And, yes, we fully appreciate your efforts in keeping us to a schedule this week, Scott. So great to catch up with you again. It has been far too long, but, you know, we do need to give the listeners time to recover from your blazing hot takes. So, we do have to tread carefully when it comes to scheduling you as well. But as always, we really appreciate you joining us tonight.
That's right. You can have me back on the Monday of July the 18th when Urawa make that coaching change.
Okay. All right. Well, yes, if that it does indeed happen, yes, we'll bring you back on, and you can tell us all how correct you were yet again, mate. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us, and thanks to Daniel H for his questions, and best of luck, Daniel, although I don't think you really need it for Saturday's J-Talk Derby. Sam, a terrific episode. Always great to get Scott's thoughts on all things J1. And, you better enjoy this weekend before you have to buckle up for a full midweek round for us.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, all kicking off at the same time. Yeah, it's a very it's testing, but at least we'll have a good, relaxing 2.5 hour podcast next week to really get the week going.
Yes, get back to normal next week. I'm sure all the listeners are looking forward to that as well. So we'll leave it there. That's it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Scott very much for his time for guesting on this episode. Thanks again to Daniel and to all of our patrons for their ongoing support. And listeners, thanks to you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up J1 Match Day 19. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.